This is Tony Wright, and we're talking with Mr. George McWilliams, Sr. of Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, Anderson County, August the 25th, 1978. How long have you been a resident of the Anderson County area, Mr. McWilliams?
All my life, and I'm 84.
84 years old. 66. Well, tell us about some of your early days here, or some of the things that you remember growing up as a young man here in Lawrenceburg.
Well, this was my father was in the buggy business, and for years when I was just a child, and he was mayor of Lawrenceburg for 16 years, and he had buggies and implements, farm implements. Also, we finally got into the automobile business when I got grown. And I think the first car that I ever saw was Maxwell. And from then on, I sold Chevrolets in 1919, and I had Dodge for 7 years, and I ended up with Ford the last 14 years I was in business. Lawrenceburg used to be a pretty wild town. I've heard my father talk about it. He said on Saturdays and court days, women and children didn't come to town.
They didn't?
No. And they just, well, they'd fight among themselves, and they didn't have any robberies and stuff like that, but they were just, they'd drink a lot. And I remember this town had 9 saloons in it when I was a boy. And they had also about 8 distilleries. They were small. They weren't like our big ones now.
Yes.
But they were small distilleries. And I can remember that many. But of course, they went out of business. Several of them did. The small ones did. And some of them we still got. And I've been I was born and reared here. I've been a lot around a whole lot of places, but I still like the size of the town. And we've got a good, quiet community. And we never had any racial troubles.
What about, you said that you all changed from buggies to cars.
Well, yeah, when the automobile come into it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of changes took place here? The roads and all that kind of stuff? What?
Now, when we first sold automobiles, we had just a regular, we call turnpikes, and they had big potholes would come in them like that. They were made out of limestone, see. But they'd wash. It wasn't sealed with any oil or anything like that between here and Frankfurt did.
Yeah.
And then later on, in later years, of course, we got better roads, and we had the first brick streets in Lawrenceburg. They went in the small towns around us, Frankfort or Harrodsburg or Versailles or anything else. When my father was mayor, that is the main part of town, the business section here.
Yes.
Down through here. And he had a bunch of businessmen on the council with him, which was good. Mr. Ballard, that the Ballard drugstore is still running, but not with the Ballard, but some of the same name. And we got out of the mud in our main part of town quicker than any other town around. And of course, they got a lot of criticism, too.
Yeah.
I remember one time they had a fire here, you know, and said, well, I'll throw the brick streets on the fire. you get a lot of criticism. I never did want to be a mayor. I moved to the country and got out of that for a few years. And when I moved back to town, I lived out about a mile. And we had the city limits, so I didn't. But they finally talked me into going on the council. So I went with them. They had some businessmen on there. That's what every community ought to have, business people on this council. Because they know the people and know more people. And but it takes a whole lot of experience, of business experience, to run a city, in a little city, not any bigger than our city. Yeah. And you need that. And that's what they had when my daddy was mayor. They was all business.
What was it like to, did you go to Frankfurt, you know, during the horse and buggy era?
Oh, yeah.
How long would it take you to get there?
Oh, I don't know. You could make about... I've really forgotten, but I think the average horse and buggy days, they could make about 6 miles or 7 or 8 miles an hour, something like that.
I came in from Versailles, and that bridge down there over the Kentucky River, back yonder here.
Yeah.
How long has it been there, do you know?
Yeah, I didn't know. When I grew up, we had ferries.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how did you get across?
Yeah, we had a ferry on down at the end of Tyrone. And, you know, when you come in from Versailles, you come across that bridge.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I remember I was a grown man when that bridge was built. And but we used to use the ferry. We had one at Tyrone. We had one at Clifton down here on up close to the lock.
Yes, sir.
And, that's the way we had to go.
Yeah.
I remember when my son was born, the night he was born, only had one child, and the river was up, and I had to go to Lexington after a nurse, and I had to go to Frankfurt and around that way to get there.
There wasn't no ferry to take you across?
Yeah, but the river's too high.
It was too high to use it.
Yeah. When the river got high, you couldn't use them. I mean, you know, way up out of its banks.
Yes.
And, of course, they had a cable on those things, and then they had a motor on them.
Yeah.
In later years. They used to pull them with that cable.
What was you using?
By hand.
What kind of transportation were you using then? Buggy or?
No, I was using an automobile until my son was born, yeah.
And
we had a hand windshield wiper, and I had to use that all the way to the left and back.
A hand windshield?
Yeah, that's right.
Stick your arm out the window?
No. You had it inside. It was on the windshield, but you had it come out. Yeah, I had a Dodge automobile. I was selling Dodge at that time, and it was a Roadster, Dodge Roadster. And I was selling cars when the first closed cars came in. We had open cars.
Yeah.
And, I was in the automobile business about 35 years all told. And, now I don't see how I live through it.
You don't, man?
No, but I've done very well, and I mean, health wise and forth. And I've been here a long time.
Been here a long time in one place.
Yes, sir, I have. And, but we've always had a very good community here to live in.
You've never lived nowhere else?
No.
Nowhere else. Have you ever thought of it?
Oh, I went to University of Kentucky when I was growing up. Yeah. And did she show you that piece that where my grandfather was born in Ireland?
Yeah, she showed me.
I was 16 years old when that happened. Of course, I remember all about that. And we had to go, had to run a coach on the train. There was no automobiles then. And he was buried in Lexington.
What was this place like, you know?
Hmm?
Like, no streets or what? Dirt streets?
Well, we had limestone streets. Ever since I can remember, we had, of course, we was close to these quarries around here and was available, you know. No, I don't remember any mud streets. We lived up on South Main. And have you ever been out that way?
I think I have.
Yeah.
Toward the Bardstown?
Well, you go up that way. I lived on further up.
Yes, sir.
And we had 10 acres of land up there, and our big two-story frame house. And that's where the Church of Christ is up there now.
Yes, sir.
They tore that down. And then we... So I... After that, why? No, but I don't remember any mud roads in my age.
Okay. How much does the name of Mac Williams mean to Lawrenceburg? How much in the Lawrenceburg is that name? Does your family?
Yeah, I used to never know of any. My grandfather came from... My father was reared in Woodford County, Mortonsville, in Woodford County. And he came over here when he was, I think, about 15 or 16 years old, and come to Anderson County.
Yes, sir.
He got him a job. And he didn't have anything, and he got a job with an old lady, rich woman out here towards Nunnally. She had a great big frame house. And she had a brother that was a gambler, and he drank and everything. And she hired my father. She said, "Now I want you to keep this my brother away from here. He'd go out there and draw a pistol on her and make her give him a check for money. Gambling away."
Yeah.
I said, "All right, Mr. Bush, I'll do it." And he said, I met him at the gate the first time, and I told him, I said, "Don't come through that gate, you do, you're going to get in trouble."
Yeah.
So he worked there a while, and then they built a distillery down here. And he lived with this man that built the distillery. It was right out here. Well, it would be in the city limits now. It was right on Fairview Avenue. Mm-hmm. And some name of Walker built it. Dad lived with him and worked with him there and hauled all the material from Frankfurt with teams and horses. I'll tell you a good one on him. He's told it to me a lot of times. He said, "You know, me and a colored fella was going to haul all that material to build this story, which took us a long time." He said, "Mr. Walker," said, "now, John, you can pick your teams. You can have either one you want, the four-horse team or the two-horse team." I said, "Oh, I was a big man. I took the four-horse team." So the color fellow was smarter than I was. He took two. He just had two horses to take care of, and I had four.
Was this a pretty rough community earlier?
Well, I'll tell you, he had told me that, what I told you.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Nothing like that. But, no. We had 9 saloons here.
9 saloons?
And when my father, they wanted to get rid of some of them. I mean, they ran them. I mean, good. If you was a minor, you couldn't get any.
What was the saloon like then?
Well, a saloon was just like these cocktail lounges. And we had a bar.
Yeah.
See?
Yes, sir.
That's all they had was a bar. You went to the bar and drank. And when I grew up, and so back there then, of course, the dollar was a dollar. And then we had about 4 good ones. They didn't put up. If you got too much, you moved on, see?
Got too much to drink?
Yes. They didn't sell you no more.
Yeah.
And we had 2 or 3 up on Court Street toward Tradicola that they were having some trouble and fights and one thing or another. So he said, "Well, there'd be one way to get rid of them, that's to raise the license." And all of these others run these first class places, you know, and didn't put up with all the stuff here on Main Street. They said, "That's the thing to do." So he raised the license for $1,000 a year, and that was an enormous price in that day.
Yeah, I bet it was.
And
what year are you talking about?
Huh?
About approximately what year?
Well, that must have been in, I'd say around 1905 or 10, long in there.
Yes.
Yeah. And, that was an enormous price.
Yeah.
Then, $1,000. They don't pay that here now.
Yeah.
And, they don't for liquor license no more. But that's what they, they weeded out, they got rid of them. But now you could walk in, and there's two or three of these places here on the street, and they would not sell anybody that wasn't of age. And if they ever caught somebody getting it for them, they'd arrest them, make them get a hold of these boys, you know, make them tell them who got them, and they'd arrest this guy that got the liquor.
Yeah.
Put them in jail. Now, that's the way they control them.
In the clink.
No, you could walk in there with all the safety in the world. I mean, in one of those places.
Yeah.
Of course, we wasn't allowed in there, the boys wasn't. But I mean, after I grew older, they had, they didn't put up no food. So, I know there's one fellow about the railroad. He had a saloon up there, and he was supposed to be a pretty bad actor. And he was a good friend of my dad's. And he got to sell liquor on Sunday. And they reported to him, the police, and to the council and the mayor. So he called him down there and talked to him. Said, "Now I'm going to take your license away from you if I hear anything about it." Everybody said, "No, I won't take his life. No, he killed one colored fella up there one time." And my dad said, "Well, I'll show you." He said, "Sam, I'm going to take him, be sure. I'm telling you, warn you." And sure enough, he did. He closed him up for 60 days.
Yeah. But that hurt his business.
Oh, man, it did.
Yeah.
He was out of business for 60 days. Oh. But Harrisburg has always been wet, dry. And before automobile days, we had three trains that come in here, anywhere from 6 o'clock to 6:20. One from Lexington, one from Lowell, and one from Harrisburg. And now those bootleggers up there would come, they'd call up the orders down here at these saloons. There was one right by the depot, too. And they'd bring his gunny sacks, and they'd get on that train, and then they have a train going right back, see. And they told me that they always stopped and let them off before they got in the city limits of Harrisburg.
Yeah.
But I've seen that done, and I mean, after I got grown, we used to go to the depot. I've seen them get off of there, and they'd have all the things ready for them, and then 15 minutes, they'd be on the way back, because it was, the Louisville train was going through the dam, see?
Uh-huh.
Then the Lexington train would turn around and go back to Lexington. And that's the way they did it. I've seen them do it a many times.
Many a day.
Yes, sir.
Huh. You say you lived here all your life.
Yeah.
When you went to UK, how large was Lexington then?
Oh, I'll tell you how large the university was. Oh, it was a big one.
UK?
It was a big one. It had 800 students.
Oh.
That was 12 when I started over. And, it had 800 students.
Yeah.
That was a big school then.
You stayed on campus, right? In that vicinity of the college.
Yeah, we had the dormitories didn't have enough room, so that we went into they rented us a house over on Rose Street. That's right back of the thing. And we lived over there. And happened to be that about four or five boys from Anderson County got in that same house. And one of them used to be county clerk here, Bill Rapp. He lived there. And Freeman Gilbert, he's passed away. They was older than I was. They'd been over for a long time. I mean, several years. But anyhow, they had this house over there. And we used to go right through where old they called him Sheephead. That was Patterson. He was the president of that university then. Used to go right by his house going home. We'd cut through there, you know, and go on over to Rose Street. You know where Rose Street is.
Yeah. Patterson was the president, huh?
Huh?
He was the president.
Yeah. Yeah, they always called him Sheephead. Patterson. But, no, there's been a lot of changes, and I've seen a lot of changes in my day. But I don't ever remember when we didn't have but we had mud streets.
Okay, from, you know, as early as you can remember to this point in time now.
Huh?
From earliest that you can remember to this point in time now, what has been the most significant change that you've seen happen here? The biggest change that you've seen?
Well, that's kind of hard to do. The biggest thing that's happened,
Has it all just been gradual?
Oh, yeah. It's, of course, our town has grown more in the last 10 years, like a lot of them have, but we're centrally located, and I've always said all my life that we had the most centrally located town in the state of Kentucky, and we do have.
Is that right?
We're 12 miles from Frankfort. Yeah. We're 25 miles from Lexington.
Yeah.
Cincinnati is only a little over an hour now.
Is right? That right? Huh.
Yeah.
How do you get to Cincinnati from here then?
Well, you get out of 75 over here, Lexington. Yeah. That's the way you go. But it used to take us 2 hours and a half to go over to the ball game.
Yeah.
You know, back in the olden days.
The olden
days. And when I was first started selling automobiles, we didn't have the highways up north. They didn't. And, we detoured all, and they have townships up there, you know. You know what a township is? All right. They had townships there. And you'd go this way so many miles and this way so many miles. And we detoured, I'll say, 50% of the way to Detroit. I used to go to Detroit, and I got the Dodge cars out of Detroit. And they didn't have these way of sending them now. Of course, back in the 20s, well, they shipped them by rail. But that was a lot of trouble because we had to go to Louisville and load them by some Chevrolet at that time.
What would be one of your pitches to a customer that would be on the board?
Huh?
What would be one of your sales pitches to a customer, a prospective buyer? How would you sell the person that was on the borderline? How would you sell them a car?
Sell them a car?
Yes.
Well, the main thing about salesmanship, as I told my salesman a many times, don't you do all the talking. You tell them, I show the man the car and give him your points of the car and then wait for some response from him to see what he's thinking. Now, that's the only way to do that. Because I was raised up in the selling business from I was big enough. And but that's a lot of salesmen. They talk all the time.
That's the
and they don't know
now.
What you're thinking
yeah,
if you're the customer. See what I mean?
They're flooding you with all this information.
Yeah, but what you want to do is to see what he's thinking. And another thing, in selling an automobile, I used to tell my salesman, I said, sort of find out what a man is able to buy if he wants a used car, see?
Yeah.
Don't go out there and show him the highest price one you got. Kind of talk to him and ask him about what price he thinks he could afford to pay, see? Because if you show him the best one, then you've got a strike against you. Because he might not be able to come up with that, but that's what he likes, see?
Yeah.
And if you can find out about what he wants and then show him something in that price, and he's easier to sell and quicker to sell.
Yeah. Who was able to afford cars back then? What type of family? Was everybody able to have a car?
Well, Ford, they didn't. Of course, Fords came along. Well, when I took the Chevrolet agency, that was the next small car. Ford was the only one. Then Dodge, we had Dodge and Ford, see. Dodge brothers worked for Henry Ford, and they made motors for him. And then they started this Dodge factory themselves, those two brothers, Horace and John Dodge.
That right?
Yes, sir. And they started the Dodge, and I took the Dodge agency right about the time they put it out. And I had it about 7 years, and I don't know, I sold a lot of them, and they were real built good then. They had 12-volt batteries in them. These other little Chevrolets and Ford, they had just had 6-volt. And I remember when Ford didn't have any, you cranked them. Yeah, you cranked them all. And I didn't have none. I mean, I didn't own one then. And but I remember when the first Dodge closed car came along. But I took them, in a year or two after they was out, probably a year after they started making. But they was built heavy and rugged and tough, and you couldn't hurt them. Now, what they've done now, they make a pretty body and they press that stuff thinner, and it's just kind of like a piece of tin. That's all it is.
Well, you
couldn't take a hammer hardly and dent one of these Dodge car bodies when they first bent.
Is that right?
No, sir. And come back for service, you never did see them no more. I doubt whether they lubricated them very little or not.
But, yeah.
Anyhow, you didn't have no service work.
How much would one of them dudes cost back then?
Oh, you mean the Dodgers?
Yes, sir.
They would, about then, they would cost about $1,200 a closed car. Then they first made a Dodge screen side truck that was very popular in Lowell, especially for these merchants and delivering, you know. They didn't have it paneled like they did now. And they just had a screen side. But they sold a world of those things. But and I can remember that as far as when they first began to make panel trucks, you couldn't give one of them away hardly. You couldn't sell them. Me and another fellow went to Cincinnati one time. I was selling Fords then. And when tobacco market come on, we probably hadn't traded for enough cars to supply the used cars, see? So I'd go with some of these other fellows from up Harrisburg around, and we'd buy some used cars for the tobacco market, see? And we went in there late one afternoon, and there was a Ford dealer up where I knew, right downtown Cincinnati. That was a big automobile center. And the way you do, if you're going to buy cars, you go in there and pick out what you want. You don't make no price. You make a price on what you'll give for 10 cars or 8 cars.
Yes.
See? And we picked out 9 cars, me and this boy from Harrisburg, and he's still living. He was younger than I was. And he said, all right. And he had a brand, it looked good as new. It was a ton van, you might say. And you couldn't give one away down here. And then he couldn't do it either. He said, all right, I want you to take that van there. I told this fellow, Mr. Sanders, I said, Byford, I said, I don't want that thing. I'd never get rid of that thing. He said, well, I'm going to put it in with the rest of them for $75. And it was a ton-sized job, too. So he took it to Harrisburg, and he finally sold it to some peddler up there. But no, you couldn't hardly give one away. You just had your money sunk if you bought any of it.
He switched sides on us. Side 2 of the oral history interview with Mr. George S. Williams, Sr. What other businesses were around in early Lawrenceburg?
Oh, we had a hardware business, plumbing business, and after I got grown. I went in business when I was 23 years old.
If you had to do all over again, you know, if you could be born in this time as opposed to the other time,
I think I'll be live through the best times.
You think so?
I had some hard ones.
Yes, sir.
Awful hard. I went through depressions.
Yeah.
I had 10 people working for me in a little town like this, and wasn't half of these was then. I had the 4 days. I couldn't get rid of any of them. I had a good service business.
Yeah.
A service business won't support an agency.
Yeah.
The profit won't. You have a hard time making anything out of service. You did then, but don't now.
What was it like for you during the Depression?
Huh?
What was it like for you and your family during the Depression?
Oh, it was a hard time. You had a hard time making enough to buy your groceries, tell you the truth.
Is that right?
Yeah. In the 30s was the worst time. In 1929, that's the stock market crash then.
Yeah.
I sold more automobiles and numbers and units in 1929 than I ever did before nor since.
Yeah.
But we had an agricultural town, and we didn't depend on factories, and we didn't, stock market didn't affect us. It finally got to us. The next year, we come us feeling it. But in 1929, I sold 160 Ford cars and canceled 20 orders. And there wasn't over 2,000 people. Well, it probably was 7 or 8,000 maybe in the whole county. And it was rough times.
This now, Lawrenceburg, then the idea I'm getting is just who you are, big time businessman. That's what I'm looking at. I see you as a big time businessman. You can go to Lexington whenever you wanted to.
Yeah.
Or Frankfurt. Or
sure.
Cincinnati, but you just lived here because you liked
it. I liked it here.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been in a lot of places, a big town, you know.
Yeah.
I went after I retired, and my wife and I, she said, well, now, she liked Florida. We went down there 9 straight winters. We went to different places. And, but down there, I'm telling you, I wouldn't live in a big city. If you give me the finest home in one of them and make me live in it, I wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
We're quiet here. And, I've got a quiet place here. You've never heard a car since you've been up here, have you?
Nope, it's real quiet here. Huh? In fact, like, this is the best interview I've had, without a doubt. This is the best, most comfortable interview I've had.
Yeah, well, but when I built this here, this street back here was 12 feet wide 20 years ago. But I was getting a little older, and I had a place out there on 62, this side of the fairground. And it had 22 trees in the yard, shrubbery, grass to cut. It was 250 feet deep. It wasn't a great big house, but it wasn't old either. It was freaking new. So my wife and I decided that she said, I'd like to have an apartment after we get older and we get ready to retire. So I had an old ironclad garage building on this spot here. So I figured for a long time, I wanted to be sure I wanted to do it before I got too far along.
Yes, sir.
And I did, and it's the best investment I ever made, and especially now. And we enjoyed it, and then we could close the door. We went to Florida and come back in 2 months or 3 months. We always stayed.
You stayed
the
whole winter.
Yeah. Oh, well, I get tired of staying any place, you know. I've been in business all my life and doing something, you know. I enjoyed it more the first 2-3 years. And she'd say, well, it's the first time in your life you haven't had something that you had to take you back home.
Yeah.
And I was never any further in Florida than Orlando. And up until I retired. And we was down there in 1950, I believe it was. And she taught mathematics in high school. She was a math teacher. And she loved it, and she loved the children. I tried to get her to quit a long time before she did, but she liked to teach. Mm-hmm. Whenever she'd I'd go home sometimes when I was out living out there, you know, and kids getting ready to go to college, and there'd be a half a dozen there asking Miss Murray what to do.
Yeah.
And, But now I wouldn't give my place here for any house in town.
Yeah.
I've got the quietest place.
Yeah. And you wouldn't have nothing to do with Lexington, as far as...
No. I wouldn't want to live over there.
Yeah.
Why not? Now here you can get over in no time flat, and you're right here in 12 miles of Frankfort.
Yeah.
We've got a world of people that's always worked in Frankfort, out in Harrisburg. See? A whole lot of them. We got a lot of IBM people here.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got some pretty high top ones, too.
Is there IBM in Frankfort? Is it?
No.
They go to Lexington?
Lexington.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got one man here. He built a regular mansion out here. And then they bought some subdivision property and some people from New York. And they bought these two big apartment houses over here. My son's got all those subdivisions. He got two of them to sell. One of them's Westwood. And they've sold a whole lot of nothing less than an acre.
Yeah.
And it's restrictions. It has to be more than 1,600 square feet. 1,600 or more.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a place like that here that where people want to build a nice home. You know?
Yeah.
These subdivisions, they're all right. They afford housing. That's for people. Which is all right, but they're all jammed up together. And folks don't, where you put a house, my father always told me that. Only if you're going to pick a home or a house, location comes first, and then the house.
Yeah.
And that's true in everything. It is today, too.
Is that right?
Well, you build a nice, say, a four-bedroom house. My son's got a four-bedroom house. You build that someplace and they stick a lot of these little old houses up the side of it. Your value has gone down.
Yeah, that's right.
It has.
That's right.
It's really gone. You can't do that. But they opened this one up and acre minimum. And it's out on 62 toward Bardstown.
Yeah.
And then they got another one on 127 between here and Frankfort. If you go back, 127 is right out this way.
Yeah.
See? And there's a lot of people that, they said, well, this lady here that used to be in the clothing business, she had a big store. She said, oh, the grass will grow up in the streets when that building. I said, it won't do it. I said, I've been around a whole lot and I've seen it done.
Yeah.
Right down here in Tennessee, well, we used to drive off, when we'd be going down to Mississippi. We used to go down there once in a while. My wife had a friend there, and she had finally moved out on this plantation, and they had 40 colored families lived there and raised cotton. Raised 600 acres of cotton. But we used to drive, and I forget the name of that town now. It's, but we'd drive off the beaten path if we wanted to go to in to eat or something. It was a good place there, and we did quite often. But we've got plenty of traffic through Main Street yet.
Yeah.
We've got plenty of ride by here.
Yeah.
But when 127 helped us a lot, she had got the Danville traffic and Harrodburg traffic for people. A lot of them work in Frankfort. Well, when they built this Bluegrass Parkway, you couldn't get across the street out here hardly. Because all that rock quarry trucks come from, all that rock come from right down here at Tyrone.
Yeah.
See? And you couldn't. You could hardly walk across the street. And we didn't have that then, see? But we have a lot of trucks come off of 127 and go to that quarry out there. It's still a big one.
When you were selling cars, would you give people good deals? Would you good business?
Yes, sir. I say this. With all honesty in the world, if I told a man anything, I would. My father told me when he was in the selling business too. He said, if you tell a man something, stick to it. If it takes the hide off, that's what he said. And I never try to mislead anybody in a car deal. And if I told him something about it, if it wasn't right, I made it right. And we had a reputation, and I had people that just come to you if you found out you're honest,
yeah.
You know, and deal with them.
They come from surrounding areas?
Oh, yeah. I used to.
I can't see you selling a whole lot of cars here, but I guess you did, huh?
Oh, yeah. They still sell a lot of automobiles here.
Yeah.
Look at the people that work out of town here.
Yeah.
Hell, there's a lot of money. And they're coming from Frankfort and living in here to live, and they're coming from a lot of them from Lowell in here. There's a lot of people driving here to GE and been doing it for years.
To Louisville?
From the lower end of the county. See,
yeah.
They go down the other way through Mount Washington. Yeah. And Ford Motor Company, a lot of them used to work down there. I don't know what they do now because we've got more factories closer.
Yeah.
But I know when they first started, they did. They finally had a bus down the lower end of the county. It went the other way, you know.
Yeah.
It went through Mount Washington out there. And that way, see. Oh, they had, when GE first started down there, I don't know, they got them a bus.
Yeah. So you say you lived in the best of times. So you
I think I did. I think now it's all different. I don't know, I'm staying pretty close to business too with my boy because I'm not in the business at all. He got started. And if a man used to would tell you that he'd be there on a certain day to see you or to pay you, if he something happened that he couldn't do it, he'd let you know that he wouldn't be there. Now, they'd say, I'll be down here in the morning, I'll see you, and we'll attend to this. They don't come, they don't tell you, they don't nothing else. And they say it's a whole lot of difference in the people.
Yeah.
It's not the world, it's the people that's in it's changed.
Right. Man's word was his bond.
Huh?
Back then.
What? Yeah, that's right. That's right. But that's the truth. My father used to take notes for 12 months. There wasn't no dairy cows, nothing. And the farmers didn't have no money on them when they sold the tobacco. And he'd take them for 12 months. And I've seen him. He'd close up on Christmas. They all had them all come along due in September and December and January. And they went to the banks then and cashed that check, got the back of the check. They didn't give checks like they did then.
Mm-hmm.
They had them, they wanted them in cash.
Yeah.
And they paid you in cash. And that's one thing that's different from what it used to be.
Yes.
But he'd go home at noon, put a sign on his door, be back at 2 o'clock. Now, that was on Christmas Day. They'd come down there, they couldn't get in. They'd come up there where we live, about a half mile, well, that's about a quarter of a mile, I guess, out South Main to see him. And he said, well, I'm coming back down there. I haven't got the note up here, no. But I've seen him sit there at his desk, and hard when we'd have a dry spell, didn't really know the back or renew notes just like that. But he built up a business, and I've had these older fellas come and tell me, he said, the first bug I ever bought, I bought from him. He said, well, I haven't got any money. I said, that's all right. He said, well, I might not pay you all when I sell them on the back. He said, that'll still be all right. And that's the way he handled it.
I was going to ask you, how would people pay for the cars and the buggies and stuff?
All right. When I sold those 160 cars in 1929, there wasn't no finance companies right
now. Yeah, I was going to ask
no,
you that.
No, there wasn't. In the banks, they turned the head on automobile paper. And I told them, I said, it's not because I'm going to do it. We'd have to borrow money sometime to finance something. But I don't think that we financed over 2 cars out of them 160.
Yeah.
All right. That changed. And when World War II came along, people couldn't get no cars, see, for a long time. You know, they cut off everything.
Yeah.
And it was 80% that done built up then. About 80% was time payments. All right. There for several years, they couldn't get any cars, see. And they was doing war materials and things like that, and they wasn't getting them. But then it switched over again. And always, it went back, though, to the finance and heavy. But when I was in the Ford business, there wasn't but very few finance companies. I know that one came in from Lexington, from out of Indianapolis. And they would sign it without recourse. Now, all them others, now General Motors had one, but the dealer had to sign that, and if you didn't, it was your baby.
Yeah.
You paid for it, see. But they got them now, and the banks loan the money direct to the customer. They didn't do that then. And they didn't want to loan you no money to buy an automobile. They took that attitude in these little towns. And the big ones, too, for a long time. But finally, they got at it. They was losing money. I told these bankers here. I said, I've seen them all coming. And I've never seen none of them that didn't make money yet. And they did.
Yeah.
And I said, back there then, well, they had the car for the thing. That's good. They had the mortgage on the car, and you had the dealer's name on there, too. And the man that bought it, you don't need much more security than that.
Yeah.
Because the dealer would have to pay for it, and he didn't.
Now tell me, would you consider this place a country town?
Well, I don't know. In a way, we've got several factories here now, you know. And it don't have these nightclubs and things like that. You know, they go, of course, they go get out of town to do that anyhow.
Yeah, they're going to go out.
Yeah, they do that. But other than that, we've got, we had a thread mill up here that came in here all. It's been the Universal Button Company bought. I mean, I'm getting a little too fast. There was a thread mill came here, and they sold second mortgage bonds. And all they did is wind the threads and put on through. So finally, they decided they wanted to get closer to the source supply, which is the South. And then told these people to own this second mortgage bond. Well, now, we'll give you 25 cents on a dollar for them, or we're going to pull out. And come to find out, they didn't own anything but the typewriters and the desk. All them winding machines was leased, see? And they built it. I didn't bite that time. I didn't go in on it. I just asked them. I said, I'd like to help. But I'm in the automobile business, and some days I got money, and the next day I have. It's so big, you know, it's fluctuated, see. Your cash flow then. And if you got a lot of used cars, the first thing you know, you'd be taking money. You might have to go borrow something. But anyhow, I said, if there's anything else I can do. So I was in partners and distributorship for the Texaco Oil Company. That's while I had the Ford business. Now, this boy wanted me to go in with him. I didn't really have time. But we did, anyhow. So they walked in his office over there, and I said, well, if there's anything else we can do. I said, well, we're going to buy some land up there. And we're taking some donations on that. So the 13 of us bought that land up there. And didn't cost us but $100 a piece way back there when we were done. So. All right. We did that. That's where Edward Sausage is now and all that. And we turned it over to banks. One fella came to me one day and said, I'd like to get a lot up there. And I said, well, I haven't got anything to do with that. It'd been so long, I'd forgotten all about it, you know. And he said, well, your name's on the deed down there at the courthouse. I said, well, we turned it over to the two banks for them to distribute on people that they thought needed. And like Edward Sausage, and then there's one or two more places up there. And Kraft Cheese, we gave them part of it, but they were already here. They bought their first part, and we gave them some. Then, when the thread mill left, that factory sat vacant up there because they didn't have nothing in it, you know. And so we finally bought it from, there was 11 of us, directors. we have sold my second mortgage bonds, borrowed $100,000 from Central Life Insurance Company, and we sold $93,000 worth of bonds. That was hard to do after this company done, walked out on these people around here, several years before that. But we did, and we bought that factory up there for $160,000, and that's the way we did it. We financed it through the Central Life. And we sold those bonds. So I wish you had that thrown up to you all the time. Look what that other done. I said, well, these people have been in business 60 years. And they make buttons. It's all they made. It's Universal Button Company. And I said, the only way they can do in Detroit is to go up. They can't get around. No space around them, see? And I said, I'm not insisting on you buying them. I said, as poor as I am, I bought $1,000 worth of them. I think it'd be that do the people of the community that much good. It'll give them jobs at home. We didn't have all these jobs around then in these other towns. And it did. And they came down here, and then they had Talon with them that they'd already taken them over, which was bigger than they are. And then I think there's another, they're a subsidiary to another company now. And they've been here for, well, in 1965, they paid off the, we give them the option to pay $1,000-something a month rent. And at the end of 10 years, that would apply on the principal if they wanted to buy it. Because we had a non-profit corporation. And I'm still treasurer of it, and we can't get loose with the thing. I mean, you can't get any more. And this lawyer down here, he wanted us to keep it, but me and the secretary over here, who was the Anderson newsman, Elliot Gerst, he just went out of the place. And we still got a little money, and it was for non-profit, and nobody made a nickel out of it. And we gave the school $1,500 for a sidewalk out towards the school.
Yes, sir.
About 4, 5, or 6 years ago. Well, all the rest of them forgot all about it because it's been 10 years. And of course they took it because they'd spent a lot of money, and it's a good company. And they don't have any strike trouble. They did one time way back yonder, I guess 15 years ago. They don't have any trouble, and they pay well. And they got a machine shop up there. Used to do a lot of tool and die work for IBM. And it's been a good thing. And of course, I've done without no interest on the thing. It's worth 6%. That was about $600 for 10 years.
Yes.
And the rest of the people did too, but looked at the jobs that it afforded the people.
That's right.
And I went up here to the bank one day, and the president of the bank, this colored boy, Charles Burke, he used to work for Mr. Gaines, the president of the bank, worked around a half. So this banker, Mr. Gaines, passed on then. And said, we tried to sell these bonds. Said, I've got Charles' name. He's a colored guy.
Yes.
And says, you can do more with him than anybody else. So I'm going to ask you to take his name. I met him down the street there. I thought maybe I'd sell him $100 to him. He said, I think that's a good thing. I'll take $500 worth. And $500 then was a whole lot. And back in those days.
Yeah.
15-20 years ago. And he did. Said, that might be. Said, I got one daughter, and she might be able to get a job there and then give some to the rest of them. And it has helped the colored people, too. They work a lot of them. And we didn't have nothing here but some distilleries, and distilleries work fewer people. The amount of they produce than any manufacturing outfit in the world.
Yeah,
it don't take but about a normal distillery around here. When I was growing up, you'd take 5 or 6 people as far as the making of the whiskey. Could do it.
Yeah.
See? Of course, now the bottling places, that hired a lot of people.
Yeah.
It does here yet. We got one of the biggest bottling places that's around this part of the country. That's Wild Turkey. And they make money on the bottling business.
Plenty of drinking, huh?
Well, they bottle for, they tell me, I don't know how many different things they bottle out. Some I never heard of. I mean, the whale liquor, different ones. They ship it in here, and they store it. They got capacity of about 200,000 barrels out there. They came down here. I'd never heard of Wild Turkey. And they was in New York, and they wasn't making no whiskey. They was buying it from R.W. Harper down here at Lowell. And they don't sell nothing less than 8 years old. And they've been making whiskey. They ain't been here 8 years, but they've been making it. And they're storing it up in Camp Nelson, another big distillery.
Yeah.
Warehouse. I mean, now, besides here. But they bottle a lot of liquor for different ones. And they pay well, too. That's the biggest one we got. Then we got one little one down here, Huffman Distillery. And I don't think they're making anything now. They're making any whiskey now. I'll tell you another tale on that. This Huffman Distilling Company, they made good liquor, and it was high price. And you didn't see it sold in Lawrenceburg much because they get more for it in New York. And I grew up with the Huffman boy, and he was a neighbor to me. And his daddy built that thing. So finally, after years and years, they ran that thing. It was down the creek. He had to open about 5 or 6 gates to go down. I remember he used to take us down there. We was kids. We had to open all them gates. Well, anyhow, to make this long story short, it went to the hands of the receiver. And my daddy owned a farm on down below there, about 160 acres, 100 acres of river bottom. He put that up for sale, and he went up there at that sale and bought 2 warehouses. It had 2 warehouses, a bottling house, and had a little house that set across the creek for $1,800.
Wow.
That's right. We use it to store hay and from that farm there, you know. You can't store tobacco in it today. Or actually. And for $1,800. Well, he tore down one of the warehouses. He made more out of that, but when he sold it, he didn't get a lot of foot. I mean, he kept it for several years. He tore down the biggest warehouse, sold lumber. He made some money on that. But far as when he sold the other thing, the Rippies bought it again, Rippy Boys, and started the distillery, and it's run for a long time.
Well, in closing, Mr. McWilliams, what can you say about this area, you know?
Huh?
What can you say about this area over the years, you know?
Well, I think it's one of the best neighborhoods to live in, and we've... As I say, it's centrally located. You can get them any place you want to, and I wouldn't live in any place else in Kentucky.
If you had to do all over again?
No, sir, I wouldn't. I'd live right here. Well, you can go get any place you want to. I went to Florida, as I told you, for 9 winters. And if you'd give me a home down there, I wouldn't have it. Somebody said, why don't you buy your house? And I said, when I leave Florida, I don't want nothing to have to go back to. And I said, we'd go different places and, you know, wouldn't go to the same place all the time.
Yes.
And I said, if you got a place down there, you got to have a caretaker to take care of it. If you don't, they'll steal everything out of it.
They sure will.
We lived in one house that a fellow owned here. And he had a caretaker there to take care of it when he wasn't there. No, I don't know why. I've never really made a home anyplace else, but I've been a lot of towns and big places. Right there in St. Petersburg, we spent three winters there. And then went to Sarasota and went to Fort Myers Beach and Fort Myers and all down to there. But I just wouldn't want to live right here, right?
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
No, I don't know. I've told you pretty long story now.
That's fine. Huh? That's just been great with me. It's just been fun. We-